General Jason Stabe, who is here to present the County Council our Freedom of Information Act roadshow. Good morning.
I like the word roadshow.
Roadshow?
Good morning,
Council. Dog and pony show.
I am Jason Stabe, long eye. I do answer to Stabe. I get it all the time. I was the FOIA deputy. I'm no longer the FOIA deputy. That has been taken over by Ed Black.
Good for you.
But I spent a lot of time doing FOIA stuff, so I know my way around. I think initially what I'll say is if anybody would like a copy to follow along, I have copies up
love
here.
Love to have
sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got copies everywhere. There you go.
You need one, Robin.
You don't want your stuff.
You have enough.
Pass them out to the audience.
Just send that down to you, Miss Robin. And maybe you fell.
Same thing, right?
Is it the same thing?
Same thing. I just
yeah.
Have them counted out.
So. I need one, Mr.
Yeah,
Guy.
One more down here.
I know.
This is very interesting stuff, folks. So get a couple copies, take them home with you, share them with your neighbors.
Yes.
Make sure. You make sure Vince gets one. Make sure Dan Kramer gets
Savage
one.
Savage in the back gets one.
Yes. Kramer got his. I mailed it to him 7 days in advance.
There you go. There you go.
And it hasn't changed. You haven't changed anything, right?
There should be a test. See how he does.
He hadn't even read it.
Oh, darn.
Quiet. Mm-hmm. Quiet in the back.
Wow.
This is our policies. Wow. This is the funny stuff to learn.
Do we need any more in the back? One more? Get one more?
Oh, damn. Missing care.
I also have extra copies of Title 29, which is the FOIA statute under Delaware Code, as well as the county's FOIA policy. Oh,
so before we get started here, a little bit about why we're here. We are doing the roadshow. This happens to be, I've been doing this for a little while. This happens to be the first roadshow that we're doing for a public body in an open meeting. So I'm excited to be here. The roadshow kind of evolved when I took the helms a couple years ago of the FOIA matters. It became abundantly clear that we had a bunch of people, public servants, trying to do right, abide by the law, but didn't always get it right. And it was also pretty clear to me that our public servants weren't always studying our opinions. They might not have had them. They might not have had access to them. There were problems. And they were kind of recurrent problems. Some would recur year to year. Some would occur every 10 years, but there were recurrent problems. Some dealt with turnover in council, turnover in school boards, turnover in state government. But there were recurrent problems. So we would what I saw was opinions on the same issue, same issue, same issue, same issue, over and over and over again. And I thought, well, why not get out and just give them the information? Bring it to the attention of the public servants so that they'll know. It'll be in their consciousness. They can ask questions. Rather than be reactive, we're being proactive here. It's just an educational program for our public servants and as well as for our citizens. So the purpose here is to just cover as much as we can in 1 hour. It's a lot to take in FOIA. I'm going to go fast. There are some areas where you might want me to slow down. I urge you to ask questions. I urge you to ask questions. And we can make this as interactive as possible. I could sit up here and lecture for an hour, but I'd rather be interactive, except with Mr. Kramer. He can call me later.
He's asked to have it be interactive, so do you want to?
I guess if there are questions from the audience, we can, as long as we don't get really overboard.
Just raise your hand.
They just have to come up to the dais and ask.
And we have somebody from the league.
It's recorded.
Yeah, thanks. Good idea.
I'll start with an overview. I kind of, when I try to compartmentalize FOIA, it really breaks down into two sections. We've got open records, public records section. Sections dealing with how you get records, what's a public record, and open meetings. How you conduct meetings, what you have to do, notice, etc. So we've got open records and open meetings. FOIA starts with a policy declaration that really provides the citizens with the right to observe the performance of public officials, which really goes to what the citizens are doing here today, observing the performance of our public officials, and monitoring the decisions made in formulating and executing public policy. You can monitor through attendance at meetings, you can monitor by taking a look at the documents, making a FOIA request, monitor the decisions made in formulating, that's a critical word, in executing public policy. So we've got this stated, this declaration, it's right in the statute in section 10,001, and this really tells us how we're supposed to interpret FOIA. So if there's any questions about how we're to interpret or apply FOIA, we're gonna err on the side of transparency. What is a public body? This has been a big issue here, and I want to spend a little bit of time on this. We could probably spend the full hour on this, but I want to highlight this as an issue that's come up quite often. It's typically not an issue. County Council, obviously a public body. But you're going to have public body issues whenever two or more public servants get together to talk about public business. It could be a body, maybe not. If it is a public body, it's important because every public body under FOIA has duties, important duties under FOIA.
Broadcasting live, we use the microphone, stand away from the podium.
Sure. So we've got the definition here of public body. It's quite a mouthful, but I can kind of boil it down for you. It talks about a bunch of legislative and executive branch bodies. Obviously, the judicial branch is not subject to FOIA. They have their own rules. But it talks about an agency, board, committee, subcommittee, or group. So you can be any one of those things. As long as you're a group, you've kind of got a minimum requirement. A group is two or more people. So no matter what you call yourself, a board, committee, subcommittee, everything down to a group, which is two or more people, established by an act of the General Assembly, appointed by a state body, or otherwise empowered by a state entity. This council is obviously established by the General Assembly. It's a public body, or established by a body established by the General Assembly. So this body was established by the General Assembly, and if this body establishes a public body, it's a public body under FOIA. And that's what we're seeing most frequently. This issue has come up time and time again, and actually Mr. Kramer has brought it up several times, and it is a problem with the committees and subcommittees. And the committees are public bodies if they meet this definition, and they need to comply fully with FOIA, including the subcommittees. That was a decision made by our legislature. I get that it can be onerous to have subcommittees, especially in the small towns, on these nominal committees, open space committees, subcommittee for open space. But they need to be compliant with FOIA. They're public bodies. If these subcommittees are going to meet, even if it's one person.
Would a caucus be considered a body? That they have certainly more than two.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
A caucus.
A caucus.
Yeah, and like in the General Assembly. They have a group of, and the public's certainly not a welcome. They're not welcome in there.
That's an excellent question, and it's something that came up the other night. Caucus of the General Assembly is excluded, right?
That's the way I look at it. That's the way they tell us.
So I don't think a caucus...
Are they making laws that they don't believe Biden by herself? Is that what's going on here?
That would never happen.
Excuse me. I didn't mean to ruffle.
It's a good question, Councilman. And there are issues with FOIA, because FOIA was promulgated by the General Assembly at the state level, okay? You know, I'm not going to bash the General Assembly, but they have been bashed by the press for excluding themselves from many requirements, okay? There are issues. There are also issues with the fact that, you know, they're drafting FOIA from the state government perspective, which is similar but not always identical to the way that the counties and the school boards do things. One perfect example is negotiating contracts. The state negotiates contracts under a procurement code. Everything's confidential until the bid is accepted and awarded. Can't see our documents. Counties, school boards, municipalities don't operate under a procurement code. They don't have any confidentiality provisions covering their documents. So if anybody bidding on a contract could come in and say, I want to FOIA the documents. I want to see what my competitors bid. It's a ridiculous concept. You could have, and the way that public bodies negotiate contracts at the county, municipal, and school board level is also an issue. We'll get to this later. I'm just highlighting some issues that FOIA is not perfect. And I think the folks at the county level and municipal level and the school boards need to be involved and active in FOIA to make it better, to make it work for folks at the local governmental level. There are issues, and we'll talk about some of those. But back to a public body. So we've got a group that can be two or more people established by the General Assembly or established by this council or established by a school board or established by a city, appointed by a public official. That could be a public body appointed by Mr. Lawson. That is supported by public funds, doesn't take much. You can use our offices, you can use our pens, we'll give you paper, we'll give you support staff. It's all public funds. Expends or disperses gifts or grants, those are usually pretty obvious, those types of entities. Impliedly or specifically charged to advise or make reports or recommendations. Okay, lots of public bodies are asked to advise or make reports on recommendations.
What about those public-private partnerships? Do they report to the government? How does that, we have a lot of those. Like we have CDAC, when they, folks that meet regarding economic development in the county, but they meet at a state facility, and it's public-private. So do they need to what's a requirement there?
What's CDAC stand for?
Sussex Economic Development
Action Committee. This is something that I was asked a similar question about a month ago. And I don't know. You're going to have to take a look at these bodies and work with your council to see if it's an issue. We're going to get to this a little bit later.
Okay.
It can be an issue. You're going to have to work through the statute, work through the case law, and see if it's a public body. But it's going to depend what they're charged to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How it was established, you've got two or more people, right?
Oh, yes.
The question is going to be, how is it established and what's it doing? If they're making reports or recommendations as public-private body, it's going to really boil down to how it was established.
Okay.
And whether it was one case, I think, that comes to mind that's kind of a similar situation is the Charter School Working Group on charter school reform. This was from last summer, where you had state officials, you had state representatives, you had state senators, you had education officials, you had other private stakeholders on a board drafting legislation for change to charter school, okay? They all met at the invitation of the governor. He didn't technically appoint, there was no executive order, he just sent a letter out saying, you should really get together and talk about this and propose changes to the charter school law. And that's what happened, and they met behind closed doors, and it was a big issue, it was in the press. Okay, a lot of people were not happy about it, okay? But that's an example of this public-private type of body.
Mm-hmm.
We determined, this office issued an opinion on this last summer, and we determined that it was not established by the General Assembly, was not established by a body established by the General Assembly, but it was appointed by a public official, the governor. He didn't officially appoint people, but he created the body by invitation and invited these people to come on board, okay? This notion of otherwise empowered, if your counsel can tell you what that means, Mr. Moore, then he's a better man than I am, because there's very little out there on otherwise empowered. It's out there looming large. You need to be aware of it. Very little case law out there on what otherwise empowered means, but it seems pretty broad.
Jason, on this one. This concerns me. We have staff that work, more than one staff. Obviously, staff works for the county government, county council. At what point does a group of staff members working to make a recommendation to their director or the department head, or then ultimately me and council, At what point does groups of staff working together trigger this definition?
That's an excellent question. We're going to get to that.
Okay.
The answer to your question is they don't. Staff can report to a body of one. You happen to be a body of one. You're the county administrator, okay? You're the head of the administrative side of Sussex County government, okay? You're free to work with your staff. The issue is going to become, I don't know, I can't read your mind, but I'm assuming when you're asking people to get together and work on a project, you don't want to call it a committee because FOIA conjures up, okay? But the reality is whenever you're working with staff, and any body of one is working with staff, they can appoint a committee internally. I think most people are hesitant to call it a committee, a subcommittee, a working group, or anything that's going to trigger FOIA. But the reality is it doesn't matter what you name it. You can name as long as you're working with your subordinates, it's not going to be a public body, okay?
Yeah, in fairness, I believe there are two pending cases in this regard with Sussex County now where our argument has been it's been a body of one made the appointment for the exact situation that you just described, that the administrator had employees reporting to him.
Okay, yeah, I'm not going to I'd forgotten the specifics of that. In January, we had a new FOIA. Ed Black, as I mentioned, took over the FOIA responsibilities. So if that opinion hasn't been issued or those opinions haven't been issued, they'll be coming out shortly. But I'm speaking more generally. I wasn't thinking about those cases.
Can I be a body of one?
You are most certainly a body of one.
No, I'm just, I mean, it just says governors and mayors and town managers could. Would I be considered a body of one if I started directing some people around?
Typically, no. I mean, you could be a body of one if council appointed a committee and you were the only person on the committee.
Now, as long as we're in, I'm not quite sure I got all this, but I usually miss it anyhow. But anyway, as long as there's three of us or two or three of us together and we're in a private building, no money whatsoever from the state or anywhere, only this private building. We use no public pencils, no nothing. Is that wrong?
It depends who the three individuals are and why you're there.
Well, there you got to get into my mind, haven't you?
Into your what? I'm sorry.
I said there, then you'll have to get into my mind.
Three councilmen at a funeral.
Yeah, well, you're not talking at a funeral. You shouldn't be talking about public business, right? I mean, that's the
three
assumption.
Three councilmen at lunch.
Same thing. You're free to associate.
Right.
We had an issue with Dewey. I'll just point this out. This is, I guess, a funny little anecdote, but we had council persons from Dewey and some administrative staff eating lunch after a hearing, and I received a FOIA complaint about a secret meeting. And I had pictures and arrows and everything, mm-hmm. with names written on the pictures, color pictures.
Ooh, color.
The reality is our assumption is that you are not violating the law when you're meeting and sitting over lunch. Okay? We expect you to know that if public business does come up and there's a quorum there, that that's a problem. Okay? Two members of council. This is a five-member body, so two members of council at that funeral technically could talk about public business. I wouldn't advise it, but they're below a quorum. They could talk about public business without violating FOIA.
Now, what's define public business?
We'll get to that. It's very broad.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Is
very broad. Anything over which you have jurisdiction, advisory power, et cetera. Usually pretty clear.
So if we had, say, a hearing in the morning session and we went to lunch and we'd already dealt with it, we couldn't have conversation about that issue, possibly?
Well, that's a good question. I never thought about that. You mean kind of like how you feel about it,
how'd it go?
It's already done, and how do I feel about this personally?
Or Vance, you dumb bunny, why'd you vote that way? I could, you know, some of those kind of conversations, you know, like we have all the time.
Well, you know, if you want to ask Councilman Vincent about why he voted a particular way, you can do that.
But that's not...
As long as it's just you two.
But if three of us are sitting together, I say, Mike, why'd you vote with Sam that last time? You know,
yeah, I think technically FOIA, yeah, right, FOIA's going to cover that. FOIA's going to say if you want to interrogate your
colleague. So all I can talk to these guys about is the weather and chicken manure and stuff like that?
Unless there's... Watermelons? If there's no quorum, you don't have an issue.
Okay.
That's
okay.
The trigger. That's for you folks. You are not a body of one. You are a typical public body, okay, with members, all right? Quorum is going to be your key. For Mr. Lawson, it's different. He's a body of one. Staff meetings, I have a question mark here. Yeah, you can have staff meetings. Okay, you can meet with your advisors. You can meet with counsel. As long as it's somebody... Well, technically, I'm assuming you can meet with counsel. It's supposed to, if he is your advisor, I'm not sure where he ranks in the pecking order in terms of town officials, but assuming he's your equal, not your superior, you can meet with him, you can meet with staff, and get on about the business of governing Sussex County, okay?
Well, it says we can't call them subcommittee or group, even a group. So I think that the name that looks like to me we should be called here is maybe we should just say we're going to have a caucus.
Yes, of course.
Well, we're not allowed to.
We're not.
It doesn't matter.
Well, see,
it doesn't matter
for us. That's what I highlighted up here. We're back to what the General Assembly did, is any caucus of the House or Senate is carved out there.
I know.
Okay?
So
they took care of themselves, and you're stuck. No caucus for Sussex County Democrats and Republicans. UD and Delaware State University, they're exempt, but their boards of trustees are public bodies under the statute.
And there's a formal definition of what kind of caucus, is that right? Because a caucus could be any variety.
That's a good question. I don't think caucus is defined. It's a generic term.
Yeah, I see it.
We're supposed to know what it means.
We're supposed to know.
Yeah. Democrats can go in one room, Republicans in the other.
Well, what do we do? We can't have Joan in the room then. The law says it.
Change the law.
It's the law.
Okay, but the body of one, you can appoint committees, and whether or not you're going to have FOIA issues is really going to come down to who's on it and what are you doing, like we talked about with the working group appointed by Governor Markell. If you're going to have issues, Mr. Lawson, when you appoint citizens to that, you bring outsiders in, when council members are in your groups that you appoint, your advisory groups, and when people from the private sector, not just citizens, but businesses that may have a stake, we call them, I guess, stakeholders, that's where you're going to have that issue, all right? That's more about public business than about you doing whatever it is you do as county administrator. Okay, so we've got a public body, and we've got duties. That's why the definition is important. Every public body has duties under FOIA. Implement a policy for addressing FOIA requests. I assume you folks have done that. Develop a web portal for receiving FOIA requests. I assume you folks have done that. Designate a FOIA coordinator. Ms. Griffith, are you the FOIA coordinator?
No, Chip Guy.
Mr. Guy is.
There he is, yes, Chip.
Sneaky guy behind you.
Chip, yes.
He's recording everything you're saying, so be careful.
Provide reasonable assistance to the public in identifying and locating records. Okay? That's statutory, and that's going to fall on Chip. Promptly request non-custodial emails and other records if relevant. This is an important one, and I just want to stop here. I don't know how your emails are stored, right? In the state, at the state level, we have a state system of emails. And DTI stores all of our emails for a year and then starts to write over them. I don't want to get too far afield in talking about archives and archival issues and the archive laws in Chapter 5 of Title 29 that say you can't destroy public documents or it's a misdemeanor. But it's an issue. You need to be aware of Chapter 5 of Title 29, and if you're not aware of that, who does the archive? Who's the archive liaison here in county council?
He's out to the building.
The liaison. We have one. We have one archivist, but he carries many hats. Mr. Dan Parsons,
okay.
for our filing, but that's for our paper files.
Right, the paper files.
IT side is IT.
Right.
Now let me. Can I ask on this little machine this county has graciously let me use, because we're going paperless. If I get emails, am I supposed not to, when I delete them, they're still saved somewhere, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it doesn't matter if I delete them off here.
Emails.
If I
are
get
forever.
Something that maybe. County, or should I just not ever delete anything off my machine?
Everyone likes a clean inbox. At least I do, right?
Yeah, I do.
I don't want a bunch of things reminding me what I forgot to do. Make sure that if you delete them, they're stored. I have a year backup.
They are. They do
yes.
it automatically.
Yes.
Stored.
I have a 1 year backup through DTI, Department of Technology and Information. They're kind of the people in the clouds. You got to remember, at least at the state level, it's only for 1 year, okay? There can be spoliation issues, and this is where Mr. Moore's ears are going to perk up. If you're on DTI system and you're only saving emails and then you're rewriting after a year, you're going to have spoliation issues down the road. Always nice to have everything printed and put in a file so you know it's not going to go away.
Did you say exfoliation?
Spoliation.
Smoliation.
Spoliation.
Okay, new one for me.
Not spoliation. Spoliation, it's just a buzzword in litigation that means you destroyed your records. Now I'm prejudiced because I'm suing you, and there's going to be adverse consequences for not having your public records. All right? You might lose a case. I don't want to get too far afield on that. You're supposed to promptly request non-custodial emails about the records. Non-custodial emails would be the emails that I don't have, that Chip can't have access to on the system. If DT has to go to DTI if you work for the state, for example. Another big non-custodial email issue is when a FOIA request comes in, Chip should be saying, by the way, if you have personal computers at home and you're doing personal business on your personal computers, public business on your personal computers, I need those emails too. They're non-custodial emails that relate to public business. Okay? Just because they're on your personal computer doesn't mean that they're not public business. They're public records. You have a duty to preserve them. Under Chapter 5 of Title 29. Conduct diligent search for records. This is really on Chip. And anybody he asks to look for public records on your home computer, for example. Consultation with a referral to originating body. This is one that comes up all the time in state government. I'm not sure how much it's going to come up for you folks. For example, I am now counsel for the Department of Correction. Department of Correction may have, and typically does in the ordinary course of business, receive documents from DHSS. Okay. If I get a FOIA request for all documents relating to X, Y, and Z, and I go and look at the documents for X, Y, and Z, and I see that they were DHSS prepared, am I going to raise their FOIA exemptions and review their documents? No, I'm going to say, these are your documents. We've got a FOIA request. You need to review them and tell us what goes out or not. That's all we're saying here. If you have somebody that might have an interest in preserving privileges or exemptions, go to the originating body. It might be a lot easier for them. They have the expertise, the subject matter. They're going to understand their own documents, or they should. What's sensitive, what's not. That's what we do at the state level. I'm not sure if you have that type of issue here. They have documents that you receive from cities. I don't know.
Don't you have to have a reason to go back? I mean, you just can't go back and say, give me these records. You have to have a reason, don't you? You just can't say, I think you committed a crime on a year ago. You really have to know that. The reason I know that because with the IRS, they said they wasn't authorized to go get my records unless they could really find something where I was wrong. I didn't have these records 2 years ago. I said, go get them yourself. I can't find them. He said, I can't go because I can't justify the reason.
This is exactly why we're here, right? That's a good question. And that's a logical question. That's just not the way FOIA works.
Oh, they just do it regardless.
Right.
They go hit the RS.
Right.
They are powerful in right.
There's no real balance there, although we try to do inject some balancing into if the DOJ gets it, right? We've got a FOIA dispute now. And somebody wants a whole bunch of documents, and we know that they're being overly broad in their request. We're going to push back on that, right? You think about discovery disputes. You've got a judge there. If things get crazy, you go to the judge and say, "Judge, they want everything under the sun, and it's not relevant, and this is just nuts. We're not doing it." And the judge says, "You know what? You're right. You don't have to do that." All right. There's no mediator. There's no intermediary in FOIA world to control that type of thing. But we do, and we will push back on that type of stuff. But it's again something where FOIA could potentially be improved, because there's really no limit to what a citizen can request, and we're not asking why they're asking. All right.
But it's the judge that makes the decision on where to cut things off, or the DOJ?
Well, let's be clear. We were talking about in discovery world, where you're talking about litigation, and FOIA is not an issue. You have discovery disputes. The judge is going to rule on those. You just bring them to a judge's attention. You send a letter saying, "Judge, we've got a discovery dispute. Tee us up for an argument." You come in. You have a oral argument. You have argument in court. Judge makes a ruling. It's over. In a FOIA dispute, it doesn't work that way. You can bring it to our attention. There's no quick intermediary to resolve these disputes. You're going to fight about it. Chip may push back and say, "We're not giving you those documents. Sue us." And then it will end up in court. And ultimately, the judge will say, "You know what? I don't know what the judge is going to say." Because the reality is FOIA contemplates that you can have everything under the sun if you're willing to pay for it. So the one check on the citizenry for what could be described as a frivolous request, an overly burdensome request, is that if they're willing to pay for it, they're entitled to it.
Really?
So that's really the quiver in your arrow there, is to say, look, here's what it's going to cost.
They're not paying. They don't pay to file, do they? The opposition doesn't pay to file, right? How much money they got, regardless.
Or the copying.
So the question I ask, do they pay?
Well, if the citizenry under FOIA...
I'm not making myself clear, I guess.
That's all right. I want to make sure I understand. If the citizenry wants documents under FOIA and they're willing to pay, you're going to have to pull those documents out, all right? With one caveat, right? We don't ask why a person's asking for records unless it's for potential litigation, right? Pending or potential litigation, right? That's the real exception there.
But basically, all our records are available to anybody, whoever wants them, for whatever reason. We can just charge them.
Correct.
Now, do we charge them up? Does it matter when we charge them? Can we say it's going to cost in the beginning, or do we after we give them to them?
We'll get to that. There's a process.
Okay.
Chip's, I'm sure fully aware of the process. You need to figure out how much time it's going to cost to have somebody find the records, copy them. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to charge administrative fees. You're allowed to charge copying fees. There was just an article in the paper the other day down here, downstate, about the fees that are charged by some of the cities and counties. They're not bound by the 10-cent per copy issue. Okay, and administrative fees, where it's kind of wide open. What's the cap going to be? $10 an hour? That sounds pretty reasonable to me. If you can get anybody to do anything for $10 an hour, $20 an hour? This is just me talking. That seems okay. You want a county employee to go dig through records? They're going to have to know where the records are. You're going to have to pay people to do this. They're going to have to be smart people that can find records and figure out what's responsive, what's not. $20 an hour? Still seems pretty reasonable to me. How about $50 an hour? I don't know. Okay, at some point that's going to be litigated and we'll have an answer. But until then, I can't tell you what's reasonable, what's not. There's no answer to that at this point for administrative fees. Public records, it covers everything. Okay, I'm not going to read the statute. It's up there. The bottom line is, if it deals with anything related to in any way in the public interest, or in any way related to public purposes, regardless of physical form or characteristic, okay, it covers everything.
Campaigns?
Very, very broad, yeah.
Political campaign? Information?
Yeah.
That's already out.
Campaign?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm. if it's a candidate, I mean, I've never seen anybody ask for campaign information. I mean, that's a, it's a private campaign.
And your opponent wouldn't have, you know, be connected with the government yet. So would their records also be subpoenaed?
That's a good one.
So you're
now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think.
An incumbent might have different rules if you're an incumbent.
I don't think the incumbent would have different rules. I'm struggling right now to think why the citizenry would have access to private fundraising activities of a candidate.
But they're posted anyway. They're
the incumbent
required.
There's
postings incumbent required, right?
That's right.
Right. We're required by other laws to
right.
post those.
Right.
Yeah,
right. That's right.
Yeah.
Campaign finance laws. So, yeah, I don't think so.
But not emails. They can't pull our emails if you're a candidate. But
I think that's probably right. I think that's right. But at that point, you're more like a body of one, right? You're just a candidate. You're not acting. You're not doing the business of the county government. You're doing your own.
That's right. It's personal,
okay.
Really.
A couple of carve-outs that we have here, and this is something I'm going to warn you to be careful with this, working drafts and personal notes. This is something you're going to have to consult with your counsel on, and Mr. Moore is free to consult me, Ed Black, or anybody in the DOJ. Working drafts. If a document is submitted with, and it says working draft on the top, and it's submitted to counsel for review, that's not a working draft. The working draft is, if Mr. Moore is anything like me, and he starts drafting a document, an ordinance, it'll probably be a cut and paste job that has absolutely no, he would never disclose that to anybody outside and doesn't say what he wants it to say because he's only worked on it for an hour. I cut and paste from various documents right now, stop. At that point, that's a working draft. When Mr. Moore sends that around to counsel, that stops being a working draft, okay? It's been submitted for outside review and consideration by the public. Personal notes. You have to be careful about this one, too. We have cases out there. These are attorney general opinions that talk about personal notes not being a public record. These are the notes that you might keep, like I did the other night, Sunday night, making notes for a trial I had yesterday. Okay, those were my personal notes. They weren't in the file. The bottom line is, if you put your personal notes in your file at work and they end up in a box in a room that you don't have a key to, that's going to be a public record, all right? It's going to be fact-dependent. Okay, your personal notes here that you're taking on this FOIA presentation, they're probably going to be public records. Your personal notes that you're creating at home to prepare you for this FOIA presentation, because you wanted to ask all these great questions, they're probably going to be your personal notes, all right? But you're going to want to be careful and consult with counsel on working drafts and personal notes.
Are you telling me that what I write on here is with personal notes?
Got to go in the archives.
I go in the archives. Is that what you're saying?
It could be. You're going to need to consult with counsel. It may not. It may be a totally irrelevant document. It may be irrelevant.
I think we all need to see them.
Then I can't write anything down much, huh?
But that's what. See, that what you just brought up is what's going to happen. Public officials like ourselves are going to stop taking notes. We're going to stop doing all this stuff. And actually, the work we do might even deteriorate on the quality you get from, you know, your public bodies, just because they're not able to do things that you would typically do, preparing yourself for, you know.
Yeah, I don't think. I'm sorry, Councilman.
No,
I understand your point, and this really isn't so much a FOIA issue as it is an archival issue. Whatever retention schedule you have with archives should be negotiated, okay? And if you want to negotiate with them and say, look, in a perfect world, the archive liaison will come to counsel and understand how counsel operates, and you will negotiate a retention schedule. And Ms. Griffith will say, look, my folks are taking notes at their meetings. They always throw these things away. Nobody ever looks at them again. They're irrelevant. We want to throw them away, okay? Yes. And then you're okay.
Right.
And then it's not a misdemeanor when you throw them away.
Oh, good.
You got to make sure you're complying with your retention schedules. So not a FOIA issue.
So it should be written down somewhere as a policy, somewhere that this is what we do?
Yes.
With our personal notes, like during this meeting.
There should be a retention schedule for your personal notes at meetings. You want to have it documented. You want to make sure that you know what you need to save and what you don't need to save. And I got to tell you, if your retention schedules are anything like some of the retention schedules that I've seen for even some larger agencies at the state level, you have a lot of work to do. They need to be negotiated. You really need to sit down. And I'm not faulting you. I don't know what your retention schedules look like. I'm just saying that it's an area that needs improvement statewide. You're not alone. Statutory exemptions.
Am I retaining order?
Do we have a question?
No, I was just seeing if Sam was retaining anything.
All right, statutory exemptions. So we've got records issues, okay? Not all, most records are public, but some records are exempt or can be exempted. You don't have to exempt them. You can waive your exemptions, but they're there available for you if you need them to protect sensitive information. This is one of the routine ones, personal, medical, and pupil files. Okay, pupil files typically at the school board level. Medical files, you may have those, you may not. Medical files are an issue at DHSS, for example. Personnel files, every public body has personnel files. Okay, the DOJ has a personnel file on Jason Stibe, right? Nobody can come, Mr. Kramer can't come in and say, DOJ, Bo, I want Jason Stibe's personnel file. Not that he would do that to me.
I don't know. He might. Don't put it past him.
Don't give me any ideas.
Yeah. Can we retain his notes?
I deal with Mr. Kramer so much, that might be public business. I mean, that he might be an employee.
No way.
God bless you.
His daughter is, yeah.
So this is a standard one. I'm not going to spend too much time on this.
Jason?
Yes, unless anybody has any questions.
Isn't statutorily some regulation, like certain records have to be kept 7 years by feds or by state?
Yeah. I mean, there may be federal laws for retention, like tax records. Okay, that's why you need the archivist to come in and negotiate with them. The archives people should know every state and federal and local ordinance that says how long you need to keep documents. Okay.
Jason, do you mind repeating what the question was so that people who are listening on the net will know?
Sure. Sorry. What was said? The question was a good one. Aren't there other laws, state, federal laws, that tell you how long you have to keep documents? And the answer is yes. And taxes are a good example. Yeah.
I believe if you go back, this is the way I found it, and I personally, I think I've gone through this. If you go back, I believe it's 3 years, they find no fault. That's as far as they go. But if they find fault at the third year, they go another year and keep on going back. So you better hold on. Just hope you didn't make no mistakes somewhere up early part of the thing. If you do, then they keep on going.
Yeah. Like I said before, in FOIA world, they're going to keep on going as far back as they want to pay for, as far back as you have records. All right. Any questions about personnel, medical, and pupil files? They're really sensitive, and they should be retained. One thing before we move on that I will say is if CHIP is disclosing personnel files, and somebody requests a copy of Robin Griffith's personnel file and CHIP gives it out, okay? If I'm Robin Griffith, I'm probably talking to an attorney, right? For violating my personal privacy. It's a tort in Delaware. So you need to protect yourself. Protect your privileged information and protect yourself from litigation on the back end. It's important.
Robin, protect your file.
But it has nothing to do with notices of open jobs here, that type of thing, when we're looking for people, to hire people.
Oh, no, the posting is that's just routine stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Exemptions, trade secret, commercial or financial information. Trade secrets, I'm not sure how often you folks would get trade secret stuff unless Colonel Sanders is coming to town and wants to put a processing plan here, right? Then he might have this secret KFC formula. I mean, that's really a trade secret. Coca-Cola, their formula, trade secret. You can have trade secrets in computer code, stuff like that. You'll know, your counsel will know a trade secret when he sees it.
How about our economic development department when they are working with companies that are talking about coming into our county.
Yes,
that's where you're going to get certainly the commercial and financial information, especially if you've got somebody coming into town who's a non-public business, and you say, give me your financials, let me see how viable you are before we do anything with you, all right? If you're a non-public business, every non-public company protects its financials, right, for competitive purposes. I mean, you just expect that, all right? If it's a public company, it may be a little bit different issue. But the trade secrets and commercial and financial information, it's confidential, right? So if somebody's, it's really the initial onus is on the company to say, hey, I'm giving you my trade secrets. Hey, I'm giving you my commercial and financial information. You need to keep this confidential if you get a FOIA request, right? And that's what you need to do. So there may be liability on the backside for disclosing their trade secrets or commercial and financial information if they've taken the steps necessary to preserve their confidences.
Many of these companies have standard non-disclosure forms that they want anybody that starts to work with them to sign. Are our county employees risking anything by signing them?
I'd have to look at the non-disclosure agreements, but I mean, it's not the count. It's not the person who signs it, really. It's the agency that they're giving disclosing the documents to, right? Unless you have some rogue employee that's, you know, sending documents out the back door to a competitor, it's probably going to be the body that didn't take the steps necessary to preserve confidences.
Well, for instance,
whoever the contract is with.
For instance, economic development director is asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement with KFC, who wants to put a manufacturing plant here. And 2 weeks later, we get a FOIA from Burger King saying, we want all the records and notes that your economic development director has on the meetings with KFC. Can we deny Burger King those records?
What you can do is get the records, look at them, give the entity that may have a stake in them an opportunity to review them, okay, or review them yourself and take out the confidential information. But if there's a non-disclosure agreement, okay, you can invoke that, but you're probably at the end of the day, if you deny it, it may be overly broad if you deny the FOIA request, right? His notes may have nothing to do, maybe have the crux of the business deal in his notes, right? That's not trade secrets or commercial or financial information. That's the deal.
Sounds like we would need to run that non-disclosure form by at least our county attorney and make sure that that non-disclosure form complies with what you're saying, that we cannot sign an overly broad non-disclosure form because FOIA would require us to provide even a competitor certain information.
That's a very good point. I've never seen in my experience a non-disclosure agreement that didn't say to the extent they have a carve out for disclosures required by law.
Yeah, okay.
Subpoena, FOIA, right?
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Investigatory files compiled for civil or criminal law enforcement. I'm not sure what you folks have, but for me and the DOJ, this is a big one, right? You can't come in and look at if I'm investigating a company for civil fraud, okay, let's say a big bank related to the mortgage industry debacle, you're not going to be able to come in and get my investigatory file. If I'm a police agency, you're not going to get my investigatory file for this guy that I'm investigating for some heinous crime. All right, civil or criminal. And this is a blanket exemption. That means it's talking about files, right, not records. Okay? You can't have my files. And it goes to in perpetuity. It's not after the investigation is closed, you can get my records, right? Because the policy here is we want people to talk to law enforcement. We want to protect. We don't want people not disclosing information to investigators because they don't want to be found out and God forbid, harmed by somebody who makes a FOIA request and wants to find out who snitched on them. Okay, it's protection of witnesses and the policy favoring people to come forward and speak with law enforcement agencies. It covers housing code violations, uniform collision traffic reports, complaints about town ordinance. Complaints about town ordinances, right? I mean, I don't know if you guys see that at the county level, but certainly the municipalities do. Down in Dewey, I'm sure there's a lot of folks that want to know who keeps calling the cops on my loud parties.
That's it. They want to know what private person.
Absolutely, it happens all
call.
The time.
We have
a complaint-driven enforcement. You know, in some of our departments and stuff, and we do not disclose as a habit, names of people who called in and complained. Can somebody then request who was that person who made the complaint?
Oh, well, it happens all the time. For let's say there's somebody who lets his grass grow every summer and never cuts it.
Right.
Okay. I come in and I'm his neighbor, and he's complaining about me. And I want to know who keeps making these complaints because I keep getting fined, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm angry. And I want to get someone. I go and I make my FOIA request. Give me copies of all of the complaints that were lodged and any documents related to any of the complaints that were made against my address. Mm-hmm. I'm going to deny that FOIA request because it's part of our investigatory file.
Okay, great.
You can delete the names to protect the innocent and give the document out.
Okay.
Protect the complaining witness. You can always do that.
Okay.
All right. Criminal files, criminal records, same deal. I'm not going to spend any time on this. It's very sensitive information, at least here in Delaware. You can get a copy of your own criminal record. That's pretty much it. Records exempted by statute or common law. This comes up fairly often, and it's one that Mr. Moore is going to be attuned to. This is what lets you protect your attorney work product and your attorney-client privileged communications. Okay. Executive privilege, that's lumped in there, but I don't think anybody here has executive privilege. At this point, Delaware, we've got the reported decision from the Superior Court or Supreme Court, the Sam Guy decision. There is an executive privilege, but at this point it's limited to the governor, a gubernatorial privilege, okay?
We have, let me just chime in on that. We have many of our applications in zoning are LLCs, and I don't think we require who are the members of these LLCs when they make these applications. Is it possible for somebody who make a FOIA complaint to the Planning Zoning Commission or to the County Council to tell us who these members are of these secret LLCs here in Delaware because of the privacy things that Delaware has established? What do we do with that?
Secret LLCs? I don't know what you're talking
about. Well, I mean, LLCs.
Mm. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly.
LLCs, you don't have to have the member, you don't have to file your membership documents, right?
Like,
everybody knows that.
Right. We have people
it's not like corporations.
Yeah, we have a no cleans ordinance, or a clean hands ordinance, where we say we won't do business with somebody who's in arrears with county fines or whatever. Yet an LLC could come in, and those same individuals could be part of that, but then maybe, can the general citizenry, a neighbor, say, this project going on is the same, developer who we don't like or something like that.
How do they
demand from us the membership when we don't demand it?
Well, that's not a FOIA issue. If you're not demanding who the members are as a matter of council business, and you don't have the information, you can't disclose it. FOIA is not the tool to get, it's not discovery. I want to know who the LLC members
are. Can they go to the state and ask the state to disclose that?
Well, they can go to the Department of State and seek those records, and they're going to be referred to the public filings for the LLC, and unless the membership is of record, which usually isn't the case for LLCs, the membership agreement, they're going to be stuck. The state's not going to do anything, in my opinion. I mean, this issue comes up all the time with LLCs, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why people do business with real estate deals with LLCs.
Right.
one of the reasons. There's lots of good reasons, but the other one is you can remain anonymous.
Right.
Well, and that's the way it's that's the way it is, and that's the way it's going to be. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, wait. I think in Newcastle County, they ask who are the members of the LLCs. My understanding is, I think that's the case. That we have a public body. We could, as part of our application process, make them to disclose. As part of our,
I mean, this is something you need to talk with Mr. Moore about.
I'm sorry. It's not
yeah, I would think that if council right. wants to have those disclosures sure. made, that you should do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm all
yes.
for that.
Okay.
Right.
Pending or potential litigation, which are not records of any court. I'm not going to spend too much time on pending litigation. For the most part, you know what pending litigation is. Potential litigation is probably one of the most abused FOIA exemptions, right? When you work for a governmental entity, a body, the reality is in these days, on any given day, whatever document you sign, you may end up getting sued on it, right? There's got to be some balance. So what we require is the threat of litigation, a demand letter, all right? Some clear evidence that you know, you're going to be sued, not just, we know this guy. And if you've been sued by the same guy on the same type of deal 10 different times in a row, that's a factor we're going to consider. You know, we're going to look at the person who's on the other side of this. And it's a fact and circumstances type analysis. For the most part, we're looking for the threat of litigation. A threat, a real threat, meaning a demand letter from an attorney. Again, if it's the guy that sued you 10 times already on the 9 prior deals he's done, it's probably, you know, you may have a good exemption there. public meetings, switching gears here. We're done with the documents now. We're going to talk about public meetings. We're in a public meeting right now. Formal or informal? Informal gathering. All right, funeral, informal gathering of a quorum of the members of any public body. So any three, but for the purpose of discussing or taking action on public business, with discussion being kind of the lowest threshold there. Discussing, not taking action. So you need a quorum, and you need to be talking about public business.
Jason, could I ask a question at this point? We have oftentimes groups ask council to meet with them for lunch. After a council meeting is scheduled, I've taken the cautious approach of it's posted on the agenda even though no discussion is taking place or votes on these matters, but it might be some group invited the council as a whole. And then traditionally what we'll do, we'll recess, go to that group, then afterwards either recess and come back here or close the agenda at that point. But there's also times, maybe there's an airport dedication, for example, someone mentioned, where the council as a whole goes out there. Does that need to be posted? They're not discussing the business. There's no votes taking place, but it's for a dedication.
You know? Yeah.
Can I interject on that one? Please come to the podium.
The podium, please.
Come on up, Mr. Kramer. While Mr. Kramer's making his way up here, I mean, for a dedication like that, and you know, it's a dedication ceremony, I would think no.
Well, that's the reason why I want to come up here. Back, I'm going to guess the time frame, and I'm saying 2000. I have the actual court case where the council was at a meeting, and there were federal guys. There was a whole bunch of people there. And I filed a complaint. And first I thought I had lost the case. But then, just recently, I was doing some research and I reread the thing. And it says, well, they're not going to make them redo it because everybody had been there. But they cautioned the council that when they were getting together, they had to post these meetings. Does that change?
Well,
I'm just asking a question.
Yeah, Mr. Kramer, it's going to depend on you know, what they're there for.
Well, this was, this, well, that there again, I guess, whatever you come up with, but I mean, it's, how does it change if you're ruling one time, one thing, and then you turn around, you override your own ruling?
Well, it, you know, a lot of times, well, this, the FOIA stuff, number one, it's not easy. I can tell you that. And it's really fact-driven. So these cases are going to, you know, cases are distinguishable. They're going to, they're dependent on their facts and the surrounding circumstances. So in some of these issues that come up, you could look at it as you know, a different ruling, but the reality is it's distinguishable. The facts are different, and you're going to have different rules depending on the different set of facts. For the facts that we're talking about now, where you've got a dedication and the and you're going to cut the ribbon, you know, there's no public business going on. You're just cutting the ribbon. There's not going to, there's no planned discussion. If it goes that you all go back to for coffee after the ribbon cutting and you start talking about ordinance XYZ, then you've got a problem and you need to stop and wait for the next public session.
And part of the reason that comes up is due to the fact that many of those items are scheduled the day that council meets, and oftentimes it's beforehand, and they'll get together because they're all going to be in Georgetown that day. So there'll be a ribbon cutting maybe prior to the council meeting. Then they come here, and then we start the council meeting. And those were the kind of situations that I was bringing up.
If you're not talking about public business, you just need to be aware that when you have a quorum of council persons together, there's people out there with phones, cell phones, hitting microphones, Lord knows, right? You just need to be careful. And if public business comes up, shut it down immediately.
But if you don't adjourn before you go out there, you're okay to talk about it. Sometimes we go out there and finish the adjournment after the meeting's over, after the cutting of the ribbon. We'll use that as an example.
We recess, go out there, come back in, cut the ribbon, and then adjourn.
Yeah, sometimes it's done like during lunch. The example, I gave two examples. One was maybe, you know, the for example, oftentimes there's a board of realtors. We'll have a luncheon, and they'll invite the entire council. So what we do, it's always on the agenda, so it's properly noted on the agenda. When they leave county council, we recess at lunchtime, go there. And then after that is over, and typically it's just someone maybe making a presentation, then we adjourn there. That's the one example. That way it's properly noticed that it is during a meeting, minutes are taken, so if any business would come up, it would be covered. The second circumstance would be maybe the ribbon cutting beforehand, where it's strictly a ceremonial type item. Those traditionally are not on the agenda. They just go there because they're all in Georgetown. Then after the ribbon cutting, they come here, we start the meeting.
Yeah, if it's an event where you're thinking about talking about business, it's going to be an issue, like if you're going to have a presentation from the Board of Realtors. If it's where you're just, you know, scheduled to cut a ribbon, I just don't see the issue there. Right.
Yep. You must remember, we've only recessed. We have not adjourned. So we move from here as a body, go to Country Club sometime, like Everett says, to the public meeting there. And then if four or five should sit together and some business comes up, it's not allowed to come up because we haven't adjourned yet. Aren't we still allowed to talk about this or not? Where are we?
The way I look at it is if you've got a quorum and you can't talk about public business unless you're at a meeting.
But we haven't adjourned.
I don't think it matters. You haven't adjourned, okay.
That's the case. Why don't we adjourn before we go to the public meeting or to the other meeting? If we can't talk,
like today, we would go out to the Board of Realtors building, but we would recess here. And we would reconvene at the room that they're having a luncheon in.
Right.
And many times, do we say that we're back in session or something, or just reconvene? And then people will ask us questions, and sometimes we sit next to each other and different things. And there is some issues about dealing with real estate, and the county council come up, and then at the end of that luncheon, Mr. President here will adjourn the meeting, and then we'll vote, all say aye, and out the door we go. What Sam is saying, are we allowed to talk about, we're in public, we've announced it, we've actually on the agenda, we're talking public policy at this luncheon. That's okay, because we've announced it, we're in session, theoretically.
Is the public there and able to observe and monitor?
I don't think the Board of Realtors deny anybody. They may not feed them lunch.
Yeah, there's been press that have shown up at those because we make sure it's noted on the agenda.
It's a little awkward. It may end up on my desk at some point or Ed Black's desk, but, just be careful.
Right. One other question. When we're all together, if I said to Mike, have a conversation with Mike about something, not everybody else, is that a problem?
You can speak with Councilman Vincent privately about public business. That's your less than the quorum.
He and I can talk, even though the other three are at this luncheon on the other side of the room. They're not involved in the conversation. Can I have a conversation with Mike? How you like that one? You're thinking.
I'm thinking.
Remember, he hasn't adjourned yet.
Right, I like to.
I didn't know there was going to be a test, but let me try and try and think this one through. I mean, normally when you're talking about a public meeting, all right, you can lean over to Mr. Vincent.
Okay, let's
anytime
just say
and talk to him about any issue you want offline.
At a funeral, Mike and I are sitting next to each other, and we bring up something.
It's not a quorum.
That's what I said. That's fine. That's not a violation.
No.
So Mike and I can talk policy.
Yes.
But if I had Sam with us, then we got problems.
Yep.
Okay.
Here's a better one. Let me switch it up. Mm-hmm. After you get done speaking with Mr. Vincent and get his views on the new KFC factory,
right,
you go and leave and sit next to Sam and start with the same conversation as Sam.
Yo, Sam, what do you think of chicken?
Exactly. And then go to Councilman Phillips.
Then we go to violation?
And then go to, as soon as you go to Sam and speak one word in his ear about the KFC
plan. Even though it's one-on-one?
Correct. All right. We're going to get to that. It's a serial discussion, serial quorum.
George, that's why you take notes.
Don't take notes.
Okay, so the quorum is the key with the public meetings, okay? Do you have a quorum? Are you talking about public business and do you have a quorum? Serial quorums, this is an issue that used to come up a lot. We don't see it too much. It can be the serial serial personal conversations. It can be the serial emails, serial telephone calls. If you're trying to reach a consensus,
all right,
the more it looks like you're trying to evade FOIA, and this is an issue that I do want to spend a few minutes on because it's coming up more and more often with the budget. All right. What we're getting is some questions, and it's just a matter of time before we get it on our desks at the DOJ. How do you negotiate a budget? I just had a question the other day. Is it okay for the mayor of some unnamed city to meet with council 2x2 in successive meetings? On successive days to vet my budget. That sounds to me like a big problem. Right?
Happens here all the time. Might as well bring it in. In fact, it happens every year.
Speaking to Mike.
Please come to the podium, speak.
Sit down here closer, too.
No.
Golly, Dave, we can't. It takes too long for you to walk down that aisle,
especially when you're crippled.
Hey, watching.
Do what?
I resemble that remark.
That actually does happen every year. It's happened for the last 20 years. Every year, they get 2x2x2, go to the administrator, and they kiss each other to see who, and then okay, they go to the other one, and they've already made the budget agreement long before the budget's ever put together. That's fact.
All right, and this happens, and as a matter of policy, I don't know if budgets should be done behind closed doors before they're voted on. I mean, these are issues that the General Assembly needs to determine.
Well, the hearing's open.
The hearing should be open. Right, we're talking about the budget that gets, the problem is, right, the budget comes, Mr. Moore finally gets, presses send on the email, right, and the budget gets here and it's on your desk and there's a vote and the whole process lasts 1 minute. Rubber stamp, all right? That's a problem.
Not quite that bad. Now, is the administration allowed to, like, the administration puts together, Todd and his staff put together the agenda. Now then, to go over it, is he allowed to call us in individually or in twos at a time to just review the...
The agenda?
No, not the agenda. I mean the budget.
Oh.
In other words, Ken.
Let's talk about this. This is important, right? This is important. If Mr. Lawson has the budget and he has a draft and it's been vetted by Mr. Moore, right? First of all, Mr. Moore and Mr. Lawson can meet, right? Two bodies of one, two county officials. No problem with that. The problem is going to be when you're going to run it by council, okay? If he's meeting... One-on-one meetings with all council persons, one every day for the next five business days, to vet the same budget, that's a problem.
Okay.
That's a problem.
Right. Or what if it's about one particular issue in that budget, or it could be a different issue with a different council person? I've seen
if he wants to talk to the president of council, all right, to discuss an issue, that's not a problem. He's a body of one, and we don't have a quorum. He can even meet with two people to discuss one issue, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is going to be then, how does that one issue get trickled down to the rest of the members, right? At some point, when Council President Vincent shares the information, the issue with the other council persons, that's when you can get into a public discussion behind the scenes. I'm not telling you how to do it. You're going to have to figure out how to do it. I'm just letting you know that it's an issue and it's coming up and we're aware of it and it's a problem. All right? There may be ways for you to do it. There may be ways for you to do it where you may have to sit there and actually negotiate the budget in public and air these issues in public.
But the state legislature is exempt from all this, right?
No. Can we drill down on that budget scenario one more level, Jason? Sorry, over here. So is it a problem that we talked about the same matter 5 days in a row with one individual counsel each day? Is it the problem that we're talking about the same matter? Is it a problem that we're talking about all five within 5 days? Where is the linchpin of triggering a public meeting on the budget? Budget's a good scenario.
You can do anything you want. You can send the issue out to council members, right? The issue is going to be, what's the interaction between the council persons? All right? What you can't do is get them one-on-one and reach eye to eye. Now you've got this council person agreeing with you on this point, all right? Then go around and speak to this council person. Once you get to the third council person talking about the same issue and talking about public business, same issue, talking about the same issue, and really this, and it's substantive, and you're talking about a vote, right? The vote's going to hinge on this issue. That's the problem.
Rounding up your majority votes is what you're saying.
So you can talk with Mr. Moore about how this can be done. And you have the same problem, by the way, negotiating contracts, right? This is an issue where I feel for the municipalities and the towns. How do you negotiate a contract? How does council come up with, who negotiates your contracts? Let me ask you that. Right, Mr. Lawson. Typical, right?
And with Mr. Moore.
With Mr. Sure. Moore, correct. And
there's
they can talk about the contract. But how does Mr. Lawson get the high and low for the bid net for the what you're willing to pay in the way of inducements or tax credits to KFC? right? Well, do your best, Mr. Lawson. Do your best.
Why can't he present the options at council hearing, meeting?
What you do want to do, the reality is you're going to want to say, Mr. Lawson, give him $1 million, but at the max we'll go to $1.5 million.
But we have to do that in public.
Yeah, we don't want to do it.
Right, you can do it in public, right? Or you can do it in writing. But how does council agree on $1.5 million?
Or that threshold of 1 to 1.5 million,
yes,
threshold.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get a consent. He's not allowed to get a consensus. How about if we did it in an executive session and he puts on the table, says, here's what I'm thinking about doing. I say $1 million to $1.5 million, and then nobody says anything.
Everyone's shaking his head.
It's an issue. Okay, FOIA needs to be fixed.
Yeah, it's impossible to.
It is. And we're actually, it's something that we're looking at.
Well, even public land, you don't want the public to know that you're buying this piece of land between two people.
Right, and there's an exemption for land.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, for preliminary discussions.
I want to hear you say that.
Who's leading the charge in Dover to try to fix any of this? Anybody?
Or are they all sitting? Write letters. I urge you to write
letters.
But it's crazy.
In your opinion, is there anybody, or aren't you allowed to disclose this? is there anybody in Dover of the legislature concerned about FOIA in the way it is presently?
I think there's a lot of folks in Dover that are concerned about FOIA. The problem is, really, with this issue, it's like not pro-transparency, right? It's me being a common-sense person and saying, I'm a taxpayer. I don't want my public officials negotiating in public. I want them to cut the best deal they can. Right? It's a common-sense fix, all right? Whether you're going to get a pro-FOIA open government person to promote that legislation is another story. It needs to be done.
So we may this problem may fester for years to come.
Possibly.
Okay. Possibly. Great.
Can I put you on the spot and ask why the department that's charged with adjudicating FOIA isn't asking the General Assembly to fix the issues?
You may be doing that. We're looking at it.
So those letters go to Dover, or should they go to the Attorney General?
They should go wherever you want to send them.
Okay.
Can we do a FOIA to find out what kind of documents on that issue that these guys have got? I bet he's...
I already got one from Mr. Kramer.
I bet he's faking it. I bet there isn't anything going on up there.
But moving right along.
Let's see what else we have.
You just said something that made me wonder, could I FOIA you for all the requests that Mr. Kramer has made of you?
Yeah, sure you can.
There are some individuals that are almost breaking these small towns with their FOIA requests and the attorney fees that the small towns are having to pay to answer FOIA requests after FOIA requests. Is there anything those small towns or even this government could do to limit the amount of money that they are spending on answering FOIA requests?
What you can do is you can complain to your legislators. We get it. We see it. It's not like we don't see it. And we have the same issues at the state level. All right? And, it typically comes up with people that have agendas. Right? They want to FOIA something to get something. They want to get information to run a business by posting it online for commercial purposes. Right? That's an issue that's been dealt with in other states. Should a commercially motivated FOIA request be treated the same as somebody who really cares about what's going on in government?
Mm-hmm.
These are issues and debates that our General Assembly has never had. It's a legitimate question. Okay? We have the frequent flyers, as we call them. It's a pejorative term, and I don't include Mr. Kramer in that list. Mr. Kramer is somebody who, in my experience, it loves to hold public officials to FOIA. And we're all for that. We're all for that. And he's usually right.
The word that concerns me is love.
What did you say?
Love.
What did you say?
Well,
love.
I don't love Mr. Kramer because he forgot my eggs.
I don't think. Forgot your eggs?
He was supposed to bring me eggs. He forgot. He promised me.
Is
eggs.
That?
Public gift.
Disclosure.
Public gift, okay.
Yeah, public gift. Fortunately, he forgot.
Try his pole beans.
Yeah.
Mr. Kramer's not the problem. The problem is the people that are requesting documents and really burdening for really no purpose. or their own private purposes, or just to be a pain in pain, right?
By the way, I'm also not a problem as long as these guys do the job right. Guess what? They don't get a voice like do they?
I don't know what he's saying. But there are problems with FOIA, and it can be burdensome, and this is a discussion that has not been had. Internally at the DOJ, we have talked about how to deal with the frivolous FOIA requests, right? Sometimes we get them from prisoners. There's frequent flyers from the prison. And, they request everything multiple times, the same thing, multiple denials to multiple state agencies. I suspect that there's one individual that has probably cost this state over $1 million. Over the years.
Individual?
I'm guessing. I would say that over the course of a year, he's probably cost us in excess of $1 million. Over the course of the last 5 years.
And I could FOIA the answer to that question, who is it?
Well, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but...
But I could FOIA it, and you'd have
if you
to...
Found, if you knew who I was talking about, you could FOIA it.
No, the FOIA question is, who has cost the state over $1 million in FOIA requests?
Yeah, you're not going to get that answer out of me through FOIA. Because I don't have to answer questions.
Well, after all, you charged me $1 million. Somebody has right to know.
Oh, you don't have to answer questions.
Right. You don't have to provide documents. So you're telling us we don't have to answer it.
You don't have to answer questions in FOIA.
Yes. Thank documents. You. We take the same route in.
Yeah. You get documents. It's not interrogatories and discovery, right? You ask for documents, I give them to you.
Could you give me all the documents of the individual who has cost the state more than $1 million in FOIA cost?
Well, let's move on. We got.
I mean, is that
more
something
of agenda
you
less,
then have to?
It's $1 million.
We'll
comply with.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I'd have to figure out if it's $1 million. Maybe I'm just making it up.
Yeah. Jason,
it's a lot.
I have a question that pertains to. The agendas that you have on there, and also discussion and action. We normally post at the end of our agenda for discussion, public comment. Let me look exactly how it is listed. Any additional business brought before council. And traditionally that's on there so that if any member of the public would like to come forward and make a comment on anything that we could address. And our rules state that we are not to comment back on those. On occasion, council members then after that will raise an issue. Now, sometimes it's as simple as I would direct Mr. Lawson to place something on the agenda for the next meeting. I don't see an issue with that. But sometimes, you know, they'll bring up an issue and discussion will start. Before any vote occurs, we stop it, call it off because it was not posted on the agenda. But what kind of leeway would council have for bringing something up on that, any additional business?
That's a good question. That really there shouldn't be any discussion about business that wasn't noticed, right? Then the next question is, if something comes up at during a meeting, there should be the deliberation. Do we need to deal with this now? And if the answer is no, the conversation should stop. Right?
Yeah.
In a perfect world.
Sure. So the safe practice is if there's public discussion, public makes comments, if council has anything, they can simply ask Mr. Lawson to place something on a future agenda.
That's right.
And you should stop that.
Yep.
If we could kind of move right along with this.
Yeah,
we're going to close it up.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Just
no,
if you
it's
just
our fault, probably.
Public meeting requirements. You folks know this stuff. Post an agenda 7 days in advance, typically, right? All right. Special or rescheduled meetings. Do you folks have any... Yeah, Mr. Kramer's asking me to bring up the six-hour issue. You're allowed to amend it up to 6 hours in advance, right? If you amend your agenda, you need to state why it wasn't on the original agenda, and why you need to move forward with this on short notice. And then you can also amend during the public meeting, right? Again, something comes up, okay, we didn't know about this. Do we have to deal with this today or can it wait? Is it important?
Okay. Jason, what if it got, what if today we post an agenda for next Tuesday and between today and next Tuesday that issue's been resolved? However, that public notice has already gone out, it's advertised, but that agenda item no longer needs to be addressed because it's been resolved. For instance, something that we couldn't predict
really
happens.
And that's not really a FOIA issue, that's really a public relations issue,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't have to post an agenda telling people, FOIA doesn't say you must file an agenda if something comes off the agenda. You can either deal with it at the meeting and say that we're, when you're approving the agenda, saying we're gonna cross this off, or you can file an agenda, an amended agenda, and let people know that it's not gonna be dealt with.
So a real right? world scenario in that case, executive session, land acquisition. We would normally go in executive session, talk about a property that we were going to perhaps entertain purchasing. In between this Tuesday and next Tuesday, I haven't heard back from the other side, so I can't tell them what our contract price is at this point. So on Tuesday at 10 a.m., can we strike executive session land acquisition at the start of the meeting because now we don't need it?
Right.
I thought I would need it, but I don't need it.
Yeah, I don't care what you – FOIA doesn't talk about what you do, how you run your meeting, right, really? And it's really just you want to keep the citizenry informed of what you're doing so they don't get angry and say, well, you know, I drove an hour to get to this meeting, and now you're not doing this? It's a public relations issue. It's not a FOIA mm-hmm. issue.
Okay.
Emergency meetings, no notice necessary. I'm not going to go into that. You can talk to your council about that. That's a pretty simple one. Conspicuous posting of notice. You know, this has been an issue, conspicuous posting of notice. Make sure it's on a door somewhere and not, you know, just make sure it's conspicuous. Make sure if somebody goes up to the door they and walks in, they can see the notice of the meeting. I'm not sure where you put your notice, but it has been litigated before, and I'm sure it will be litigated again. And it's got to be at the principal office or where the meetings are regularly held, right? You don't need to publish in the newspaper. You folks still doing that?
Okay. Really?
And if you're a state agency, which you're not, you need to publish on the state's public meeting calendar. And you're supposed to make a reasonable number of notices available. I've noticed that that tends to get overlooked a whole lot. What's in the notice, date, time, and place of the meeting, whether or not you're video conferencing, the agenda, if it's done. We already talked about when it can be amended. Here's the big issue. What do you put in, how much detail do you put in the agenda, right? You have to let the public know what you're going to be talking about so they know whether or not to attend. This is just really common sense stuff. The more important it is, the issue is to the voters, the more information you should be putting in these agendas. I love some of these, and I'll apologize in advance because I'm going to make fun of this, but I hope this wasn't you folks. All right, if you're going to issue $4.5 million of industrial revenue bonds, don't put application Pat's Inc. on there, right? It looks like somebody's opening up a pizza shop.
That's us.
Nuh-uh. Was that you?
What? Most likely.
This is an actual case. I didn't cite the case, but this actually happened. There's a $4.5 million industrial revenue bond issuance, and the agenda notice said application Pat's Inc. Right? So no one knew that there was a debt issuance of $4.5 million on the agenda. Okay, that's a problem. Restriction of voter eligibility. This is an issue. Whenever you're talking about voting rights, if you, town charter changes in the agenda. That's all it said, town charter changes, right? Maybe that would be okay for some kind of ridiculously nominal change. For restricting voter rights in a town, that doesn't even come close. If you're talking about an agenda and it says class size enrollment, this is obviously a school board, right? And the issue, and that's what's on the agenda, class sizes and enrollment. And you're talking about new teacher funding, public money. That's not enough. All right? It's really just common sense. There's no reason not to be disclosing more on your agendas. Public needs to know what you're going to be talking about to make decisions. executive sessions. Executive sessions, all right? I don't want to get too much into the Dewey opinion. You may have heard about it, maybe not. The bottom line is, in our office right now, there's two different views on how much type of information you have to put in your agenda for executive session. Up until the Dewey opinion, it was pretty easy. No one has a right to know what you're talking about, to listen in on your discussions in executive session, so you really don't have to tell them that much about what you're going to talk about. That was kind of the policy, and that was the view. So it was simple enough just to put on your agenda, we're going to talk about litigation. We're going to talk about land acquisition. Cite an exemption. The Dewey opinion said that's not enough, you need some more information, and that Dewey opinion has not been withdrawn. All right, so it's out there. So the best bet, if you're preparing your agendas, is to put a little bit more information about your executive session and what you're going to be talking about, recognizing that there's times you're not going to want to say executive session, litigation, because we want to talk about suing KFC for defrauding us, right? They really don't want to do business here, right? There's going to be information that you're not going to want to put in your...
But you can just say land acquisition. It's not enough to just say land acquisition. It has to be further defined, is what you're saying? How?
What I would say under the old view, you could put in... I don't know if land acquisition is the good one, because that's more about records, but...
I thought that's where you were going.
You could say, let's say land acquisition, okay? Under the prior Dewey view, that would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Post Dewey, I think you probably want to say where the land was, which makes, but you may not want to say disclose what land you're looking at, right? You don't want the landowner to know. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this whole issue with Dewey and how much disclosure you're going to want to put in, just like litigation, you don't want people knowing that you're talking about suing them. So I get it, and it's just something that needs to be ironed out and clarified in the case law by the courts or by our office, all right? But if you can, put more information in your agendas with respect to what you're going to be talking about in executive session, all right? Oh, probably should have put this first. Executive session, reasons that you can talk about things behind closed doors. I just listed a few of them. An individual's qualification to hold a job. Right? These are typical things. They're really sensitive. You don't talk about somebody's job qualifications in an open meeting. Okay. Strategy sessions. I'm going to spend 1 minute on this because this is important. Strategy sessions, the open meeting exemptions, this one is the most abused. All right? And we talked about this already and possibly legislative fixes for this. Strategy sessions under the current statute. There are strategy sessions with or without an attorney to talk about collective bargaining or pending or potential litigation, right? You probably talk about pending or potential litigation all the time. When's the last time you negotiated a collective bargaining agreement?
Not since I've been here.
Most folks are invoking this just to negotiate contracts. Strategy session about contracts, right? That's what people are doing. And that's what the law says. It's really not covered, right? But that's what everybody's doing, because it makes sense. You know, I don't think anybody can say that it makes sense from a fiscal standpoint to have public bodies negotiating contracts in the open, right? It just doesn't make sense. So this is one we're looking at. This is one that could probably change. Maybe there's creative ways around it that you could FOIA compliant, get the type of bargaining authority that Mr. Lawson would need to cut a deal, but failing that, you're stuck with this, and this strategy session is not broad enough to cover it on its face. And personnel matters, these are typical things. You would say personnel matter on your agenda, right, executive session. You're not going to say personnel matter to deal with Mr. Lawson and the lawsuit that just got filed against him, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
that's kind of sensitive information. You don't want to put that out there like that. So, sorry, I threw you under the bus there, Mr. Lawson. All right, meeting minutes, very little. Last thing, last page. Prepare meeting minutes. I tend to like more information in meeting minutes, but the statute says all you need to do is a couple things. Who was there and what they vote on and how they vote.
Executive session meeting minutes.
Or good question. Executive session meeting minutes, totally different story. You do need to do meeting minutes for executive session, okay? And they may or may not be confidential for however long. But they need to be. You need to have separate minutes for executive session. I would prefer very detailed executive session minutes, and you should think about whether or not you prefer very detailed minutes. Because when I'm looking at it, I need to know, or the DOJ needs to know, what did you talk about, right? Because somebody in the public, one of the citizens, is going to say, "I think they talked about X, Y, and Z," and I say, "Well, give me the meeting minutes," and the meeting minutes say nothing. Or you might not even have them. Now I'm going to say, well, I don't know what you talked about, so I need affidavits from all five of you. Sworn affidavits.
Well.
All right? There's no other way for me to get the information. If I have detailed executive session.
We all said nothing. What would you do then?
Said nothing in an affidavit?
Well, you said nothing in an affidavit. We all said.
I'd say, all right, I think they violated FOIA and.
Oh, you can't prove it.
Go to court. Go to court. I'd tell them to go to court with our opinion that says we think you violated.
And aren't those minutes going to be very sensitive and what is done with them and that type of thing?
Yeah, you need to be careful. I mean, you're going to talk about sensitive information. Somebody's medical history can come up in a personnel matter, and who knows? You need to treat them like confidential documents.
But the members of the folks who went to the executive session are entitled to a copy of the minutes of the prior meeting, are they not?
I mean, that's internal affairs stuff that's outside the scope of FOIA.
Okay, so then they may not be.
All right, that's the end of the presentation. Here's the contact information here on the end. Ed Black is the new FOIA deputy, our FOIA coordinator, Janice Gaboras, and we have our opinions online now from 1995 to present. Here's the website. It's really useful. You can do Boolean searches on there, and highly recommend it. I use it myself. All right. That's it. Thank you, folks.
Thank you very much. Very informative. Thank you.
I have just one question I wanted to ask, if you don't mind. I'll be very brief. Jason, can you backtrack to page 19? I have a question about the I'll just read it. Publication must include conspicuous posting of notices, bullet point 2, for all non-county and non-municipal public bodies electronically on state website approved by the Registrar of Regulations. You asked us if we are still advertising in the newspapers, and the answer to that is yes, we are, and you said that we don't need to do that. However, I thought for that to apply, that's because state agencies are now posting their notices on the state website, which we do not. We post on our own website. So
you're right.
Does that remove us or preclude us? Real quick here,
I put this language in. This language was added last year by the General Assembly by mistake. They were trying to change the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act, and that's why there's a reference to the Registrar of Regulations. Somebody added it to FOIA. It's nonsensical. Why it's in there is beyond me. It makes no sense. Non-county and non-municipal public bodies. So that leaves state and school boards. It doesn't make sense on its face. I just wanted to point that out, that that language is there. Ignore it. It was added by mistake.
Bottom line, you're not required to advertise public notices in newspapers. Is that correct.
That's correct. And not even online, although we encourage you to do that.
We already do that by policy.
Yep.
A couple of other quick questions, Mr. President. I did have a question about FOIA requirements with respect to social media, posts, responses, messages, because people are moving outside the traditional means of communication, telephone calls, letters, even emails. They're now communicating with government via text message or specifically an IM on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Someone sends you a message to your page. What are the FOIA requirements with respect to the social media footprint that we now have, or our website?
It's retention schedules. I think it's an evolving issue, especially when it comes to the transient IMs, right?
How do you document those unless you take a screenshot of your computer?
Right, because they're harbored within the application, or they're within that ecosystem.
It's an issue. And, you know, it is a public document, but, you know, this is where archives and new technology need to...
well, that's a public stage. I mean, that's public.
To be reconciled.
Wide open.
And my last...
The IMs are not.
No, the IMs would not be.
Closer sometimes.
My last question, though, is, and this is more of an administrative question, where does a routine general request for information end and a formal FOIA request begin? And the reason I ask that, because under the statute, we are required to keep track for accountability purposes of every request that comes in, and we do this. However, I will go on record to tell you that when someone calls in and asks for what I deem to be a rather routine general inquiry, how many building permits did the county issue last year? I'm not considering that a quote-unquote formal FOIA request. To me, that is a simple question that can be answered in the matter of a couple of minutes there on the phone or via email, and I'm not tracking that. Are we technically in violation of the law by not tracking every single interface?
That's a great question, and I think you're doing it the right way.
Okay.
You know, well, if it's a problem on Facebook, why couldn't you have meetings? You could have town hall meetings. I mean... Are we restricted from doing that? The reason why we shouldn't have town hall meetings?
It's not, I'm not sure I agree with the premise here. It's not, Facebook isn't really a problem from a FOIA perspective.
Right.
Right? It's an archival issue.
That was my question.
Okay.
And they have, now they require you to do snapshots of your website site. So DTI is now randomly taking every two or three months or so, they'll take a snapshot of your website. Which is kind of crazy because if you know about these Twitter sites and these Facebook sites, you have people that are posting some really bizarre stuff, right? Some X-rated stuff on your websites, and you need to manage these websites and control them. So Lord knows what's coming out in these snapshots. I don't know. It's an issue.
No, saying they ain't gonna do.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was better than the last time.
Which was
we were up at Dover that night, right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Lawson.
All right, Mr. President, thank you.